The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What did Seinfeld used to say when they rubbed the ears?
I don't know.
Owusu, or what the hell was the word they had? But like the
Owusu Koromoa.
Yeah, Owusu Koromoa. That was it. Why do I ask you about anything on TV or movies?
I did watch that.
You did? Yeah, apparently. Oh, baby. Yeah, it was Serenity Now, not Owusu.
Owusu Koromoa.
It sounds good, though. Owusu Koromoa. I think we should all do that. We should make that a thing. I mean, damn, he's that good. We're going to talk some Owusu Koromoa here in the show. But man, it's Wednesday.
It is Wednesday.
We got lots of stuff we're going to hit here today. I mean, just basic training camp stuff, stories that I think haven't been hit, all that. But the first story of the day is your outfit. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, seriously, what the fuck are you doing wearing a blazer on my podcast? What the fuck?
I've not gotten that reaction since I wore a logo on the podcast, like an NBC logo. And you go, what are you doing? I go, I work for the company. You go, get it out of here. So if you're listening, I'm wearing a button down, which you wear
all the
many
time.
Times. So
yes.
That's not out of the
out
of the norm of possibilities. No. But I'm also wearing a blazer.
Yeah. Men in blazers.
Yeah. Men in blazers. So
Men
yeah, I had blazer. To do a, I had to do some NBC things while I was here.
Tape
a couple updates.
Updates?
You know, weekend updates.
Okay.
I pop on TV. Hey, I'm Ahmed Fareed here for 2 minutes.
Right.
And then when you do stuff like that here at NBC, they go, you got to wear a jacket. And then when I walk in and I say I'm doing Sims today, they go, I don't care what you wear. You can wear whatever you want.
Yeah, that's pretty much status quo.
So I wanted to take it off.
Right.
I wanted to take the jacket off.
Yeah.
But
you
said no.
No, you could take it off now that we've embarrassed you a little. If you want to take it off, that's fine.
It just seems so out of place for this podcast. I mean, like, I normally am okay in a blazer, but on this podcast seems so strange.
Yeah, it's okay. You look, I like the sneaker look with it.
Okay.
It's pretty good. All right.
We'll keep it on for a little bit.
Yeah,
we'll
keep
a little bit.
When you get uncomfortable, or if you feel like your pits aren't sweating too much, feel
that's a good call. You can't tell.
You cannot tell.
If
I have no idea.
If I'm pitting out.
No idea.
All right. So maybe we will keep it on because we got a good one today.
Yeah,
we
baby.
Teased this last time, which a lot of good positive reactions to our comeback episode.
Good.
Chris, I hope you had some texts from friends that were like, glad to have you back.
Yeah, I know I did. I saw a little on social media. Listen, I mainly go through what's going on my social media a little. I go through Pete.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pete Demolitolitis is truly the angel on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Because he knows that I can get a little emotional with stupid tweets or things like that where I want to prove my point and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So he filters the good and the bad for me to keep me in Owusu now.
He's like a human shield almost.
Definitely.
He's looking at a lot of the hate out there.
My
he's taking
Greek
it away.
God shield, Pete Demolitolitis.
We did get a tweet from Richie Brown.
Ooh.
After our first show where we did the Wawa meter.
What up,
or
Richie
as you
Brown?
Said, the Wawa meter. He goes, great show, guys. Literally the top of my pod list.
Ooh.
So good to be back with
what
Richie.
What up, Richie? Thanks, man.
He goes, however, we need to talk about the whole Wawa meter versus Wawa meter thing. He goes, you're both wrong. It's pronounced Wawometer.
Well,
like a thermometer or a speedometer.
He's right.
He's right.
But Richie, way to self-scout us on this one.
Which
you
is what
are
we
correct.
Need.
Right. I mean, we knew I would butcher it. I mean, that's the status quo. I'm kind of famous for fucking up the English language.
Yeah.
You, on the other hand, you should be embarrassed.
Yeah.
You
I'm a little
be.
Bit better than you. A normal broadcaster, I'm still.
Wowometer?
Wowometer.
Wowometer.
The wowometer.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's
so
the way
it's. So when we do it again, it's the wowometer.
Right. Yeah, we'll get there. You
so
still can't
better.
Even say it.
not that well. Okay, so we look back on the wowometer. We look forward now to underreaction. So I'm really excited about this episode, Chris. And we've been compiling different ideas of stories that maybe aren't getting the pub that they should get.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes in the off season, the story is, oh, you guys are overreacting. It's like, oh, you, look at you idiot out there overreacting to all these stories right. out there, which we do sometimes because we're so desperate for stories in football.
Sure.
But every offseason, maybe there are some stories that are flying under the radar that need to be talked about a little bit more.
I think so. Okay. I think there's a handful here, so hopefully we hit on some of them.
So most of these, I think you're going to agree, are under-talked about.
Yeah.
There could be a few that you think are, that's okay. You don't need to talk about that because it really is not that big a deal.
Right.
So we'll see as we go here.
Yeah.
But we're starting with some of the big news out there. And you could argue that maybe this is already being talked about as a big deal and overreacted to, but the Dallas Cowboys and the Dak Prescott injury, the shoulder injury. I feel like a lot of the talk, especially coming from the Dallas Cowboys, is like, don't worry about it. This is preseason.
Yeah.
This is, you know, we're seeing Matt Stafford not play at all. Aaron Rodgers won't play at all. Yeah, he's a little dinged up, but it's not that big a deal. Dak Prescott, week one, will be out there. Do you agree that that reaction's appropriate, or are we underreacting to the significance of this Dak Prescott injury?
I think from the get-go, I've been pretty standard here. I still think we're underreacting to this injury. I do, yes. I mean, from the base like point I would make right off the bat, and I said this to Florio a few weeks on PFT when he first heard it, or we first heard about the injury. Like, and I'm not trying to be a jerk here. I challenge any listener out there. I don't know and cannot think, and I haven't Googled it or anything like that. I've never heard of a quarterback pulling their lat muscle. That is a really, really rare quarterback injury, if ever. Right? And that's more of a baseball type of injury. And I kind of went over this with Foria because, you know, baseball, as you know, you're pitching off a mound.
Yep.
Your body's fully extended like this. It's a different motion than a quarterback where he's holding the ball up here and not, you know, extending himself to the level of a Clayton Kershaw or some of those guys. Yep. So that's where I think we're underreacting to it a little bit. You know, and of course it is his throwing shoulder, and he has a lower leg injury to go along with it on the same side of that throwing shoulder, where I don't know if he's using the full force of his leg to push off. And here's the last thing I'll say. You know, of course, a lot of their season and the way it goes is dictated by him. I mean, they're a passing team. It's his team. You know, the run game, all those things. Hey, great. No, it's going to be about Dak Prescott throwing the football. We know their defense will be better, but I don't expect it to be top 10 or anything like that. But the one thing I went back and looked at this, and you everybody who listens to me, you know, I'm a psycho about quarterback mechanics and things and all of that. I, from the first time I saw him throw this offseason, thought it looked different than the years I've seen Dak Prescott the last few years in the NFL back to Mississippi State. And when I went back and compared film from last year before his injury and some of the throws I've seen on Hard Knocks and things like that, to me there is a little bit of a difference in the way he's throwing. And that's where I think people are underreacting. And not that I'm like, hey, I'm rooting for Dak. You know that. I'm a Prescott fan. I've been on he's a top 10 quarterback in football here for the last 3 years. But I am concerned when your team is going to be based around throwing the football. You haven't played in a year. You have a lower leg injury that is part of pushing off and helping you gain power, and now I see a little bit something different in your throwing motion. See, and it's really, listen, it's tough, and I do consider myself a trained eye. You're not going to see it much if you're watching the rollout throws, but here, like these are the throws I notice it. There is, and I'm going to like kind of demonstrate this. There's a little bit more of a verticalness to his release that he did not have, at least in my opinion, before the injury. Hmm. And so before the injury.
Is that a bad thing? Is that necessarily a bad thing?
It's not necessarily a bad thing, but if you've been throwing one way your whole life and now you're making up a new way and asking a different muscle pattern to be, you know, I need this muscle pattern now to help me throw the ball hard or far or do those type of things.
You're recruiting different muscles.
That worries me a little. Yeah, yeah. And especially like, again, a lat, all my years, you can ask anybody. I was like the guy who was like, hey, you're throwing too much. I never had my lat feel sore ever, ever throwing a football. And so here is what I hope people are watching on YouTube and everything like that. But here's to me the little bit of the difference in the motion, okay? You know, Dak Prescott last year, when I watched film before the injury, you know, it's kind of traditional. It may be not as around as much as I talk about, but the takeaway was more like this, right? You know, traditional, take it away, slot the arm perfectly, use the body, and then throw, okay? What I see right now, and even what we saw just like one or two of those clips, is a little bit of a motion to get up like this. And that, to me, is what would anchor your lat into the throw. Yeah. There's a little bit more of this, you know, ball drops for a second, and then it goes straight up instead of, wait, before it used to be just right here in the middle of his chest, and he would kind of pull away, and it was a nice, seamless, smooth motion. You know, again, he's still going to be good throwing this new way and all that. I think it's probably something that he created early on when he was getting back from rehab because he couldn't push off, so he was trying to throw, and then to put a little extra mustard on it, he found out, wait, if I can get a little higher here and do that, I can throw it maybe the way I want and get the results I want, yeah. But it's not necessarily best for his body. So I'm just going to continue to keep my eye on that. I said at the get-go when he hurt this, I said, this will not be like a 2 or 3 day where he'll be out of practice for 2 or 3 days. Yeah. I told Florio then, I was like, I bet you that's not the case. Yeah. And we went 10 days at least without him throwing.
Because it's more troubling because you wonder how'd you get that? What happened and what changed to give you that injury?
There were some Hail Marys in practice.
That makes total sense.
So he stressed it that way.
It makes total sense that if he's not recruiting the lower leg muscles as much,
right,
and he has to overcompensate.
And then you're changing the upper
leg. Which is why they take a pitcher out of a game when he's been hitting the leg sometimes, or he has a hamstring injury. You go, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, it changes everything.
Exactly right. Now he's compensating for that being hurt, so now he's using another muscle, and then all of a sudden you get off the mound and you go, my right hip hurts. And you're like, you go back and watch film, and you go, well, that's why I can't push off with the other, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You're right. It changes it that way. Plus being the fact that his arm is probably not as in good shape as it usually is because he had to do rehab and all those type of things. Okay. So again, I'm not like, I don't want to overly react.
Sure. Okay,
but I'm saying let's keep our eye on this a little bit.
All right. So let's fire up the fearometer.
The fearometer.
How fearful are you that this could linger into a week, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 thing?
Well, as we sit here Wednesday, McCarthy is already saying he doubts they're going to see Dak Prescott this weekend in the Texans preseason game for preseason game number 2, right? And I understand it. I think they understand this is rare, and there's a reason why you heard that they talked to the Yankees and the Texas Rangers, because they were probably like, I've never had a quarterback pull this muscle.
Yeah.
And they had to reach out to baseball people to do that. The fearometer,
yeah,
like fearometer. If 10 was like, oh my gosh, I'm so fearful.
Yeah.
I'm like right down the middle right now. It's 5.
Okay.
But I just think we all got to kind of still continue to gauge this and watch this because of the rarity of the injury for a thrower.
Sure. And their Twitter account has tried to tell us not to worry. It's not a setback.
They've been saying that from all,
freaks everyone out when you're like, why did you just tweet that?
Right.
Okay, let's stay with the Cowboys real quick before we move on to other teams because there are a couple other stories. We're underreacting to the fact that Ezekiel Elliott is going to be able to carry that offense because he is in now, hashtag, the best shape of his life. Turned 26 in July. He's lost some weight. Are we underreacting to the story that, hey, it's okay, Dallas. You got Zeke in the best shape of his life.
I feel like we're overreacting.
Oh, we're making it that's not necessarily the case. We're putting too much emphasis on the fact that he's lost weight in the negative direction.
Well, I feel like everybody's putting it in a positive direction. Like, oh, look at him. He's in the best shape. He's skinnier and all those things.
Yes, I see.
Where there's
saying.
An over. So am I right there or am I fucking my own brain up?
This is what's gonna, so this is what's going to happen with the underreaction, overreaction. We're going to confuse ourselves in the asking of the questions.
Yeah.
But let's just get the truth out there.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Is it a good thing?
To me, everybody's overreacting about how he looks and everything like that.
Okay.
Okay. And like, oh, it's going to be better.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying here, let's just get the truth out as you're right.
Yeah.
What I want to just say is everybody pump the brakes on that overreaction. That's really what I want to say.
Okay.
Because he looks great and all those things. And I don't know where it goes. And I'm rooting for Zeke. I really am. Again, I'm just trying to give you guys football knowledge, things I've seen in my life, been through, seen a lot of these guys in person, all of that. I think that it's a little putting the horse in front of the cart with this one.
Sure.
First off, you know,
is it not a good thing though that he's lost weight?
I don't think it's a good thing. I don't. I think there's a thing about being in shape and doing it the right way. I'm not sold on his way as the right way. That's what I'm saying right now.
No.
You know, to where, okay, this is the first thing, right? He's a power running back. He's car crash running back. He's not like 80 yards, I'm going down the sideline, touchdown running back. Mm-hmm. That Zeke doesn't exist anymore. So now we're getting smaller and skinnier to do that. And I don't know. This is what I'm saying is I got to see it to believe it that this is going to work. All right. You know, I don't think it's a good look when I watch Hard Knocks and you're sitting next to your quarterback and your quarterback's thighs are twice the size of the running back's. Mm. I don't think that's a good look. I've never seen that. I mean, so that's where, like, little right now, I'm just like, I got to see this whole Zeke thing and how this looks this year. Mm. I really am. My experience, as I've told you a little bit before the show, because you were kind of asking, like, what do you mean by all this?
Right.
It's just like, I saw players in the NFL, whether it be my dad's career, my own career, or even when I got out, where they get to that age where, yeah, physical ability starts to decline, and they think, if I lose weight and get skinnier, I'll be faster and more what I used to be like. And my experience in that is that's a negative ghostwriter. It actually ends up being the opposite effect. You don't get any faster, and then you start to lose your power and explosion, and, of course, some of your armor to protect you. You know, I can remember a little bit, I don't think he'll get mad at me for this, Derek Brooks. I think it was my last year in Tampa, he was getting up there in age, right? He wasn't the same guy. I mean, this is Derek Brooks now. He's Hall of Fame, the man. I'm certainly not trying to disrespect. But he took that avenue, and I can just remember sitting on the sidelines that year going, he's not really any faster, and now I think he's lost some of his power and his ability to take on blockers and blow people up and do that. So all I'm saying with Zeke is I want to see how this skinnier, I've cut weight and got smaller experiment goes.
We're underreacting to maybe the negative effects losing weight.
That's what I think it is. That's where it was. Because it's like, I think everyone's overreacting to the fact that he's skinny.
I think it's a positive. Everyone thinks it's a positive. How could that not be good?
He's going to have an amazing year and everything like that.
Okay.
And, you know, again, running backs are usually packed with muscle and jacked, and some of the most jacked humans you'd ever see in your life.
So far, you're pretty doom and gloom on everything with the Dallas Cowboys right now. So the final thing, and we'll turn it around, we'll be a little more positive now, and this can kind of be a jumping off point to some other really impressive defensive rookies.
Yeah.
Perhaps we're underreacting to the transformation that the Cowboys can have on defense, thanks in large part to the rookie, Micah Parsons.
I think so. I think we're underreacting to that. First off,
we're back on track.
We're back, baby. Here we go. Okay. And again, I'm not rooting against Dak or Zeke. I want all positive things there. Just concerns of mine, just being around football. But this one is one where I go, yeah, people are underreacting. I mean, Micah Parsons, again, you don't need to be a rocket scientist. If you watch the Hall of Fame game and you watch the Arizona preseason game last week, you go, well, who the fuck is that stud in the middle of the defense? That number 11 guy. He's everywhere. He looks like a freak of nature. And then when he moves like a freak of nature. I do think he's going to change that, you know, defense. You always hear me say, first off, he's got a great energy. He's got Dan Quinn, who I do think is going to change the culture of that defense a little bit too. And if you're going to run that scheme, as we always talk about, you need your Bobby Wagner, right? And I think this is their Bobby Wagner. Size, physicality, attitude, incredible speed for the size. I've been blown away by just how comfortable and easy it is for him as a rookie. And he didn't even play last year in college football. So to me, like, yeah, I think people are underreacting as how impressive he's looked.
How much could one player, a rookie in that position, improve a defense? It could take him from where to where.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were one of the worst in football last year to where, like, him with the combination of Dan Quinn and a few other plays, I mean, the players, I mean, they could, you know, I think they're going to jump up 10 spots.
Okay.
Be in the middle of the NFL as far as, you know, first off, their scheme fits this, their players fit this scheme more than what they did with Nolan last year. And I think that's worth at least 3 or 4 spots in your ranking altogether.
Okay.
But Parsons, yeah, it's second level NFL with the running quarterbacks, the read options, all those type of stuff, very important position, and they got a superstar there.
And there are a couple other defensive rookies who have looked good so far. So are we underreacting to how good Zaven Collins and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah Owusu-Koramoah.
Owusu-Koramoah.
Are already looking. Have we underreacted to that?
I do. You know, because all you hear about in week one is, I mean, what do you hear about? Quarterback.
There was a podcast on Monday that all they talked about was the quarterbacks.
Yeah, and you want to be like, there was 27 Sims. Other picks in this round that weren't quarterbacks, right? So Zaven Collins, I had the same exact feeling with Zaven Collins as I did when I saw Micah Parsons in the Hall of Fame 2 weeks ago. I just went, who's that big guy in the middle? He can run. Who is this guy? You know, it's the modern day superstar NFL middle linebacker. And yeah, between what I'm underreacting with that, where I think people are underreacting to them is, you know, yeah, you could see the guy is made for a middle linebacker. Everyone would pick him apart during the draft. Oh, maybe he should be a rusher, a pass rusher, because, you know, he played in the whatever conference Tulsa's in. And is, can he really play middle linebacker and do those type of things? Well, that's already over. I've already seen enough to go, he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing I just love that's being underreacted there is, hey, again, modern-day NFL, you got to have some linebackers like this. Him and Isaiah Simmons against those NFC West. Oh, Shanahan, you want to run Lance and do all that? Okay. Well, these guys can run with Lance, and they're going to hit him too. Same with Russell Wilson. You want to scramble? Oh, they got a QB spy for you, and they can fly these two. So they're game changers that way, let alone they're going to have great, you know, effect even on the McVay speed sweep and all that type of stuff, and extreme athleticism in the middle of that Arizona defense. But love the way Zaven Collins looked.
Yeah, we saw this a little bit last year. Defensive players didn't have a huge year. Rookie defensive players, I mean. And Isaiah Simmons was one of them. They didn't pop. And I don't know that there was really one that was able to go through the whole year and be like, yeah, that guy was a stud all year long. You know, ebbs and flows.
Right.
Is it just harder for defensive players, or could some of these guys be that?
No, I think some of these guys get this. I'm going to say this as a bold statement right now. This will be – I'm betting that this is the year of the defense. I'm going to say this is the year. Last year we had all – it was all the good teams with the good quarterbacks. You know, the no offseason, as we discussed early on last year, hurt the defense more than the offense. Brady and Rodgers were still getting to throw routes in 7-on-7. Defense, what the fuck are you going to do? Mm-hmm. We're going to go, what, tackle? We're going to – I mean, it's hard to get prepared in a season like that, let alone a rookie who's like – what? No offseason, COVID, it was a weird year. I would think the defenses are going to be different altogether this year because they're going to have to fully implement their system. Yeah. You know, you got to think of a defensive coordinator a little bit. Yeah, some of them probably wanted to do some crazy exotic defenses, but they're going, we didn't play preseason football. We didn't practice that much. Yeah. We're not that good at the basic defenses. I can't give them this complicated, like disguise and do this and this and this. We can't even do A, B, and C yet. So I would expect the defense takes a little bit of the power back this year.
All right, so our next story.
Do you want me to hit Owusu-Koramoah real quick? Just because, did we hit him? We didn't really,
hit
him.
Yeah,
really I just want to hit on him real quick because, hey, we're underreacting because, you know, to me, first off, it's just rare that a linebacker like him, 215 pounds, comes in. And again, right away, I mean, from the get-go, against the Jacksonville Jaguars, I mean, like, one of his first plays of the game is, like, shuffle. He's shuffling down the line of scrimmage as the outside zone's going away from him. And then, oh, now the running back's coming through this hole, and he, boom, tackle right away. And then his ability to just shoot gaps when he goes, I got this gap. If it opens up, he flies through it and creates chaos. You know, they needed that type of player in Cleveland.
Yep.
That was the missing link. They have an unbelievable roster. Now that they have him, whoa, watch out. But I just thought he's phenomenal and versatile. Like, this is where he's crazy, Ahmed. He's playing middle linebacker. All of a sudden, they bring an all-out blitz, and they go, you cover the slot receiver, and he can cover him. So they're going to be able to do some different type of crap because of his skill set.
I mean, there were very few players in the draft that you talked up as much as you talked up this guy. And you got to see him firsthand.
That's what helps
covering
me.
Covering Notre Dame.
Sure, right.
But you love this guy. He fell because of what, a heart murmur?
Heart murmur, exactly.
Which
right.
is that, I mean, is that going to impact
him? Not going to affect him. It's just like people get scared to take that in the first round.
How much money did that cost him?
Yeah. It's a few million dollars. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. But he was a first round talent. And yeah, you know, seeing people in person does help. There's no doubt. And he was a freak show my few years at Notre Dame.
All right. So you said that this could be the year of the defense.
Yeah.
There is one story out there that could challenge that, that maybe we're underreacting to.
Mm-hmm.
The impact of a new rule in the NFL.
Ooh.
That new low block rule
right.
in the NFL. This is the way it states, no more open field blocks below the waist by the offense or defense outside the tight end box. So that's 2 yards outside of the traditional tackle positions, 5 yards on either side of the line of scrimmage. I think, Kristen, we have a photo of it, 32-08, if you want to punch it up there. Oh, we don't.
Look at you.
Pete says we don't have it, though.
Okay.
So all I just threw to a picture we don't have.
32-08.
Edit that out, as well as the setup to the Zeke running back question. all right. So, no. But I think you've seen it. You could go out there on Twitter and find it.
Yeah.
There are some videos out there already.
This it was the 49ers, like, right? It was the 49ers game.
Yes, it was.
Last week against the Chiefs. Here we go.
Yep, it was against the Chiefs.
Here we go.
We
got
so
a
we do have
bit.
The pictures.
Awesome.
Oh, we got a picture. Oh, nice. Okay, so there's big ol' 62 going out there, and what will happen is that's, what, 20 for the Chiefs.
Right, right.
We'll go low to take him out. You know, it's got to, how am I going to get this guy down to try to help out my teammates
right.
make a tackle?
Goes low.
So he goes low on 62.
Because his job is that outside gap.
Contain.
Right? He's got to force
the running
him
back
inside. Right. So right now he's taking that guy out on the outside to go, wait, I'm going to make the running back cut inside.
Setting the edge.
And now 42 and 46 can make the play.
So 20 will get called for a low block, which was totally confusing to me because I was like, how do defensive guys block? But no one can go below the knees anymore to take down, take on a blocker, to block. So, I mean, the 49ers guy could not have gone low on number 20 there, correct?
No.
So what kind of impact is this going to have? Is this going to hurt the defense? I mean, how do you, if you're
a
tiny little defensive back out there, what do you do now? Just get run over?
We're definitely underreacting to this, I think, as a whole. And I want to see more football to see how it's going to go. But, like, I know initially when we heard this last year, we were like, oh, man, that's going to be tough on the offenses. And the unintended consequence here, or at least through the first preseason game, is I went, oh, shit, actually, I think it's going to be worse on the defense, right? That's where you're just not sure. And listen, I don't have a concrete answer here. I don't have anything that I can just definitively say. I think I want to see how some of these defensive coordinators are going to play these certain situations. Are they going to ask him to – I don't think they're going to ask him to shoulder the guard and be like, take him on.
Right,
and
just take him blown up.
He's going to get crushed. You're going to lose your cover corner if that's the case. You know, somebody like Jalen Ramsey could be out. You're going to go, shit, he hurt his shoulder because Zach Martin was pulling and hit him, and we told him to take him on.
Right.
Right. So how are they going to do this? Are they going to, you know, you don't want to tell a defender or a DB to do run around, right? Like run around, like all of a sudden that DB cuts inside of that guy to try to go make the play. Because then if he misses the play, there's nobody outside, and he's going to have a free run to the end zone. You know, so I really am interested to see just the technique that some of these defensive coordinators are going to tell their corners or safeties
right.
that got to be put in these little positions to what they do. And I don't know. The thing that came to my mind right off the bat, if that old picture we just showed there with 20 against 62, maybe he's just got to come high and around in that way. Am I explaining that right?
Just like, run past
just
him.
Run past him and around him and try to break down, and that's going to be your way to have to cut him, you know, make the running back cut back inside. You know, like here, like 20. Maybe he's just going to have to go around 62 on the outside.
Right.
And then just try to make a diving approach at the running back's legs to tackle him to make him cut back inside. To me, that's the thing that jumps out to me right now. Because like I said, if 20 goes inside of 62 right here, 23 is going around the edge for a touchdown.
Right.
He's going to be untouched. And so, again, I don't have an answer for
which
you,
still creates
but it's very
whole,
interesting.
I mean, they say that you over-pursue, and that creates running lanes, and you tell your defensive end to sit there, to squat. You know, don't over-pursue, because then you open up those holes. And so it's going to be – it could open up some more things for
it
the
could.
Offense.
I'm hoping that we get a few more clips of this week to where I can see maybe what defensive coordinators are going to coach their players to do and – go, oh, that makes sense, or ooh, you can't do that. I'm sure they're trying to kind of figure it out as we speak right now, too.
I think overall probably a good rule, right?
Definitely.
You don't want
little guys
flying at big dudes' knees.
We lose a few great
versa.
Offensive linemen every year because they think, okay, wait, I'm going to go block this DB, and all of a sudden the DB just out of nowhere goes low and dives at his legs, and he can't get his legs out of the ground, and they tear an ACL or do something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like even like the There was somebody else last year that had an injury like that. I can't remember. Maybe it was George Kittle or Juszczyk. Juszczyk might have had that for the 49ers. He was going to block somebody. Somebody caught him low before he was quite ready, and he hurt his knee and was out a few weeks. So I think it was him. But either way, it is going to be interesting to keep evaluating that.
All right. So
sorry I don't have an answer for you. I don't know
what to say. No, that's good, though. Yeah. But maybe it's going to be a bigger deal, and we'll track it as the regular season weeks roll on here. Okay. Let's get back to the quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always reactions to quarterbacks, but maybe we're underreacting. I don't know if you're going to agree with this one. We're underreacting to what we saw from Taysom Hill, especially an interception. And perhaps that has given the edge to Jameis Winston. Are we underreacting to some of the negative plays that we saw from Taysom Hill?
We're overreacting. Okay. It's the opposite there. That's the opposite. First off, Jameis Winston's interception is more concerning to me than Taysom Hill's interception. You know, kind of like a lofted ball late down the left sideline that got intercepted. Taysom Hill, first off, on the first drive, made some really high-level phenomenal throws. Drove them down the field, scrambled to his right, and threw like a little hole shot up the right sideline. They fumbled the next play, didn't score. So the interception, you know, interception I think is a really cool play actually in general, because you know, I was watching the game live and I've seen people react and be like, well, that's why it's risky with Taysom Hill. He's got to hit throws like that. Okay, well, this is a little more complicated than you think. First of all, we got Taysom Hill here in shotgun. You see Ty Montgomery on the left here. I hope everybody's watching on YouTube. Ty Montgomery's going to run a shallow cross. Okay, there's rules for shallow crosses. I think I know the rules for Sean Payton. They're very similar to my John Gruden offense. If you see zone, you sit down, right? If it's man-to-man, you keep running.
Right.
But there's little nuances, too. If it's a zone and everybody's way, way back, right, and there's no one in front of you or anything, we would call it the green grass rule. Keep running. There's nothing but green grass. So we don't have to, just because we said it's a zone, but the four DBs are 30 yards deep. We don't want to sit down there. We'd like to hit you on the run so now you can make a play after the catch, right?
Right.
So that's what I think happened here. So let's go through it. You see Montgomery on your left. Taysom Hill's got in the shotgun. Next picture, Pete, when you get a chance. Here he goes. You see it's zone coverage. Look, right? You see nobody's really matching. Everybody's going, the linebacker that's on the emblem right in the middle of the field, he's looking at the wide receiver going up. And as you can see, the two defenders on the right, the corner and the safety, they're what, Ahmed? 10, 12, 15 yards away from Ty Montgomery right here?
Yeah.
So I believe this is the green grass rule, okay? Even if it wasn't and he sat down and Taysom Hill was wrong, who the fuck cares? He's going to figure it out in practice this week, and Sean Payton's going to teach him, and he'll do it right the next time. It's not that egregious.
Right.
But I do think Ty Montgomery's wrong here. So now you keep going, right? He's getting a little pressure, so he knows he's got to get the ball out. In my opinion, I think he's throwing the ball thinking, wait, you're still running. There's nobody in front of you. It's the green grass rule. And here you can see the ball's out of his hand, and Ty Montgomery is still running to the other sideline.
Yeah.
Right. So now, do we have one more clip? I think we got one more picture. Now he stopped. Right. He hasn't even seen the ball yet, and the ball is already in the air, right?
Yep.
And it ends up being intercepted by the guy that's 6 or 7 yards behind him. If he kept running, I mean, I don't know. He might come up, catch the ball, and, you know, run up between the numbers and the sideline on the right side there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, either way, to me, that was not a concerning interception. That, to me, was just a bunch of haters who don't want to believe Taysom Hill can do this, overreacting to something where, again, listen, I thought he looked the part, and I will be shocked if he's not the starting quarterback there.
Do we have the numbers for Taysom Hill versus Jameis Winston preseason week number one there? Because Taysom Hill ended 8 for 12, 81 yards, the one interception that we showed you, the one sack, no rushing attempts, which you know that they're going to use him as a running quarterback if that's how they end up starting their team with Taysom Hill as the starter. So here's the comparison, 96 passing yards for Jameis Winston. He had an interception. Why was his interception more concerning to you?
Because it was not a great throw. A kind of just lofted up, jump ball type of situation. He brought the safety over there. That to me is like, more of an egregious mistake than maybe a little communication error between the quarterback and the receiver and what should be done in preseason game number one. His was like, wait, it's man-to-man to the left. The safety's in the middle of the field. He just stared at him, had a little pressure, threw the ball late down the left sideline, and underthrew it by 5 yards. To me, that's worse than what Taysom Hill did. Not that that's totally horrible either.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Other thing people need to take notice here, too. Again, hey, Baltimore played their starters. Taysom Hill was out there against starters. Marcus Peters was out there. I mean, they had everybody out there. So, you know, there was something to that, too. Jameis looked good. He did well. Jameis does not have the strength in the arm that Taysom Hill has. And he doesn't throw as a catchable ball either, as Taysom Hill, let alone if there's no Michael Thomas for the first 8 weeks of the year.
Yeah.
I just think you're going to need some of the Taysom Hill quarterback running stuff to be another part of your offense. So, you know, again, I like Jameis Winston. You know that. But I expect it to be Taysom Hill as the starting quarterback there.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
So Taysom Hill versus Jameis Winston, we'll find out as the preseason rolls on. The Colts have an injury issue. They thought they figured out their quarterback situation with Carson Wentz, but a little bit injury keeping him out. There's some love, though, for Jacob Eason.
Yeah.
And Sam Ellinger. JesseKen22 has been tweeting us a lot.
Yes.
About Eason.
Yeah.
So
he had some impressive throws.
I'll throw this out there and see if you agree or... We're underreacting to how okay the Colts can be without Carson Wentz for a few weeks. Maybe they're going to be okay. Are we underreacting to that? Or no? Is it the opposite?
How did you say that? That was like a double negative. I was like, what? No. We're
You tell us what you think, and then I'll frame the question around that.
What
do you think? Are they screwed without Carson the first few weeks?
They aren't screwed, but I think this is like a legitimate, like, I mean, from the outside looking in, I'm worried a little. I feel like we're underreacting a little bit to the significance of no Carson Wentz.
Okay, hold on, stop. Are we underreacting to the significance of no Carson Wentz the first few weeks?
Yes, we are. That is really well said by you. Yes, we are underreacting to that.
We got this.
I think, like, hey, we talked all offseason. The Colts are in the Super Bowl window.
Yep.
There's no doubt.
That's why they made the trade.
Exactly right. And now we're handing the keys over to an unproven commodity. Mm-hmm. Who, you know, was a second-round pick, and a lot of reasons second-round pick, because it was just like, wait, how professional is he? How detailed is he? You know, is he going to do all the right things? All those type of things. That's kind of why he fell. You know, Eason's got talent, to what our Twitter guy said there.
Yeah.
Like, he can really throw it. He has an incredible arm, and he has size to go along with it. You know, but they got to be able to trust him, too. And again, I don't have answers here, but like one thing that tells me that maybe they don't trust him all the way is he was given the starting quarterback. You take number one reps, And then all of a sudden, about 3 days in, they were like, Sam Ellinger got a lot of reps with the ones today. Mm. To me, that means Jacob Eason probably did something or had a few bad days of practice, or they were like, whoa, like we can't trust him. So that's where I feel like, you know, we're underreacting a little bit, and especially because the Colts' schedule early on is like insanity. I don't know if anybody has a tougher first eight games than the Indianapolis Colts. They have one break in week six against the Texans. But when you go Seahawks, Rams, at Titans, at Dolphins, at Ravens, five playoff teams, bam, right off the bat.
Yeah.
And even though I know it's a new year, like, oh, it's a new year, maybe all those teams aren't back in the playoffs. The one thing I can guarantee is all five of them will be in the playoff conversation. So whatever, they're good. You got the Texans week seven, then at the 49ers on Sunday Night Football on week seven, excuse me, Texans week six, and then the Titans week eight. So, you know, tough schedule on the get-go.
Yeah.
You have a quarterback who's with a new team, and now he might not be able to play the first week or two, right? Mm-hmm. And you got an unproven commodity, so that could affect weeks three and four when Carson Wentz comes back because he hasn't got to play and practice and do all those things. And then, yeah, we don't know who they're going to use week one if Carson Wentz can't play. You know, my base thought is Jacob Eason can run the Carson Wentz offense, and they don't have to do anything to adjust their game plans. He can hit T.Y. Hilton and Paris Campbell 50 yards down the field and throw all the big throws that Frank Reich wants to put in his offense. The big thing they're going to have to come to the conclusion is, can they trust him? Can you trust him to, you know, not, I have the strongest arm in football and fitted him between Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner right here week one. And then the next week it's, I got the strongest arm in football. I can split it in between, you know, Jalen Ramsey and Leonard Floyd over here. Okay, yeah, maybe you can, but maybe that ball gets tipped up and intercepted and all of a sudden you're losing 14-0 and your team can't come back and beat these two teams.
Right.
That's what I worry about. So that's where I am with that. And like Ellinger, you know, they could probably play, like, control the ball, defense, quarterback runs, few throws for him here and there and do that. But I just don't know if that's going to win you games against those type of teams. You know, like, if they were playing the Bengals and some other lesser teams early in the year, I'd go, oh, they might be able to play Sam Ellinger ball and win those games with the quality of their roster.
Here's the hope for the Colts is that early in the season – some of those teams don't have everything in order.
Agreed.
Right? More weird stuff can happen week one, two, three than when teams get rolling week seven, eight, nine.
Right.
So if you can get through that stretch and say, when is Carson supposed to come back? Do we know?
I reported pretty early on that I knew they weren't overly concerned. The surgery went well. It wasn't as bad as they thought. And they thought there was a chance he could play week one. I know that from a very good source.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say, you know, he's not going to miss more than week one or two. That would be my bet. Wow. I think that's about as worse as it gets as far as what I've heard from credible people, right?
All right. So say you win one of those two games or you go 1-2.
Yeah, that's what they want to do. They want to go
screwed.
1-2. Right, you're not screwed. It just, the only reason I'm saying we're underreacting is because we got two quarterbacks that are not proven, and now Wentz is missing all these valuable reps and things with his team, too, to where he might not be hitting on all cylinders when
until
he gets back
week
in week
seven,
three or four.
Yeah,
exactly. It might take him a little time to get going. So that's why I say it's a little bit of an underreaction, like you phrased it so greatly.
I don't know that I did phrase it like that. We'll have to go back and check the tape on these because I go, I don't know what I said to start it all off. All right. But we're getting the information out there, and that's what's most important, right?
I think so.
Whether we confuse you or me in asking the question, that's, you know, small potatoes.
I agree. Or fucking up a wow-o-meter, a wow-o-meter. Yeah. Either way, it's what they're...
Fear-o-meter, you know,
all that. We don't take
stuff.
Ourselves too seriously.
Okay, let's go over to the Steelers right now.
Yeah.
Who they still are taking themselves seriously because they say they're in the window to win a playoff. That's why they want Big Ben to come back. They go, let's see how long this window can stay open.
Right, right.
But eventually, you have to move on. Yeah. Every team does. Ben's not going to play forever, although... Right. You know, Tom Brady may. I don't think Ben will. So you need, you know, phase two. Are we underreacting to the fact that they may have already found phase two? They may have already found the next Steelers franchise quarterback.
I think so. I don't think it's got enough play that, and we're talking Dwayne Haskins here. Yeah, I don't think he's got enough credit for the way he's looked in the first two games. You know, I don't. And, I mean, I've been thoroughly impressed. I mean,
and you have not always been high on Dwayne Haskins.
Well, no, right? I have not. You know, I mean, I've seen the talent. I like what he, you know, I like the potential coming out in the draft. But some of the things he did in Washington, the way he acted, and you know his professionalism, all those things, I think there were a little bit of question. Now, he's a really young kid. I know that too. Mm. You know, no doubt. But man, what I saw in the Hall of Fame game, and you know, last week against Philadelphia, first off, right off the bat, here's the first thing that jumps out to me. Quick, decisive decisions. He knows where he's going with the ball. That's always a good thing to start off with, right? So there's that. Then he's fixed some of his issues throwing the football. And that has led to some wowometer type throws where I go, wow, like that was a big time freaking throw. You know, the biggest thing I've seen in his adjustment is throwing the football is he's more on balance as a thrower.
Okay.
You know, he's got more, I'm not going to stand up, but he's more here, right? He had this little issue where he leaned forward too much. And then it was kind of an all-arm throw from there. Now he's always got his feet underneath him. And his motion's always been tight and quick. But now it's just more efficient and consistent time after time. And it's leading to an unbelievable amount of quality footballs that he has thrown down the field that have made me go, uh-oh, he's getting it. And to me, here's the biggest thing, too. Like, hey, he was a top 20 pick for a reason. He's got talent. He's got size. He can move a little bit. He was also the youngest kid drafted in that draft. And where I think this is where it's awesome that he went to Pittsburgh. You've heard me talk about Mike Tomlin before.
Yeah.
Mike Tomlin is just like the man's man of all men. I mean, that's what he is. He's an unbelievable leader. He doesn't want to hear any bullshit or excuses from anybody. Maybe Big Ben can have a few. Yeah. Other than that, nobody else can.
Yeah.
And he holds everybody to that. And I feel like that's what you see too here. Okay, mechanical fixes, but I just feel like he's a different man on the field too. Like no excuses, no bad body language. Just, hey, you missed the throw, man up, walk off the damn sideline. Let's go. Next play. Here we go. Whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it could be big. And I would be, I don't want to say shocked. They might make Mason Rudolph the backup, right?
Okay.
They might do that. But I think if he is the backup and Ben gets hurt, it'll be a short leash for Mason Rudolph. Because there's no doubt that Dwayne Haskins is more talented than Mason Rudolph.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be interested in where it goes. But, yeah, I do think there's a chance he's the guy of the future.
I'm a huge Mike Tomlin fan.
Yeah.
As you know, he's never won Coach of the Year. I think that's a travesty. He was a front runner to win it last year, and then they had the late season collapse.
Yeah.
But he is helped by the fact that, you know, Haskins is not their first-round pick. Doesn't look bad on them
right.
If he busts out of Pittsburgh. It's
no
like,
doubt.
It doesn't matter to us.
Right.
It wasn't our first-round pick.
That's right.
We just tried to make something out of him.
You're right.
There's one play.
Yeah.
15-yard.
Oh.
Pass to Cody White that stuck out to you. For what reasons?
Well, the first thing is the quality of the throw. The second is, it's a throw that's usually not made against this coverage. And I know some people will go, well, is he making a mistake? I don't think it is, because I feel like the receiver was kind of expecting the ball, and I think they kind of evaluated the way the Eagles play this certain defense to go, yeah, usually we wouldn't throw this route here, but I think it's okay. But this is what I like about it. He's in the shotgun, and there's the tight end and the two receivers on the top of the screen. The middle of the three receivers is going to get the ball. Now, usually, and he's just going to run a straight go seam route right up the seam there. Usually, that's a type of throw you make against, like, there's a single safety down the middle, right? And you kind of just keep your eyes on him or look him to the right. So, boom, now I can come back and throw to that guy running up the seam. They're playing too deep here. There is a safety, but where I liked it, not only did I say wow the throw, I think Haskins realizes the safety's at, like, the 4-yard line right here. And they're on the 24. And I think he's going, damn, the safety's 20 yards freaking deep.
Yeah.
And then he snaps the ball, and he's up almost in the end zone to where he's almost like 30 yards deep. So I just have seen great recognition and confidence in where to go with the football. And you could see here, the tight end's over the middle. You could see the guy right by the 2 and the 20-yard line running up the hash. And he knows there's a safety, you know, 15 yards in front of him. And he's going to start to gear down. But Haskins sees it as well, and this is what I like about Haskins. You see here, he's going to push up in the pocket. Here we go. Let's go to the next frame, and he's in a good position as far as where he's throwing the football, and he throws a laser and puts it on that guy to where he catches the ball, and he doesn't get crushed or hit or anything like that. He actually protected him, And you see here, you're going to catch the ball about the 8-9 yard line for a big play that puts them in scoring position to get a touchdown or get some points here at the end of the first half. There's just been a lot of those type of throws that have wowed me. And that was a special one. And again, I don't think that was a mistake. I think that was something they knew what they were doing.
Right.
And I have no reason to think it was a mistake, because really almost every throw I've seen them make in the preseason has been the right decision or the right place to go with the ball. So encouraging for Dwayne Haskins.
I think it'd be cool.
It would be,
I think,
right?
A lot of times that we, you know, like to categorize players, oh, bust, and then not revisit it.
Well,
right?
That's why I feel like people are underreacting right
probably
now.
Probably are.
You know?
Probably
they've
are.
They've let him off on the bust train.
Yeah.
You know, he's a bust. He's a bust.
Yep.
You know, and,
the
and
bus
you know
bus.
Me.
He's
a bust.
He's put
right.
him on the bus.
That's where I, you know, that's where I don't go down with that. Whether I like you or not, if you're going to already, like, pigeonhole a guy into something because of his first year and a half on a not so great team in a weird situation he was going to put on, I don't like that. You know, it's like it goes back to Ryan Tannehill. It's like everyone's still holding on to that 2017 narrative. No, fuck you. You're wrong. It's 4 years later. He's awesome. Deal with it.
All right. So maybe. Right before our eyes, you know, the Steelers are getting their quarterback of the future. It's developing here, and we're not noticing.
Yep.
The same could be happening in Denver with the Broncos, the guy who we thought was going to be the quarterback of the future, and I think a lot of people now have written him off. Is it happening again? Is Drew Lock now emerging? Are we not talking about the fact that he still could be that guy?
Yeah. I think so. I think it's a little like what we just talked about. I think there's a little bit of a hater thing on him, and it's where it's like nobody wants to make a big deal about what he did on week one in the preseason. I know it's week one in the preseason, but damn, it looked awesome. Let's give the guy a little credit. You know, he looks like a different player. The decision-making, again, is perfect. You know, I mean, it's quick. He knows where he wants to go with the ball. You know, throwing the ball looks phenomenal. And to me, the biggest thing with Drew Lock, I mean, first off, there was I feel like people were going to, like, you know, pillage the streets and, like, go out and be mad because Drew Lock was coming back as maybe the starter in Denver. I mean, I used to live in Denver. I had friends.
People
there,
just
like,
want to move on.
They
it's
do.
Just like, I wanna, I'm done
oh,
with
let's
that.
Go to the next guy. Let's go to the next guy.
I'm bored with Drew Lock. I don't want to wait for him to develop.
Right.
Into the
okay.
Big guy.
Yeah. Let's like, let the guy get into another year in the NFL here. Okay. It hasn't been the best situation in Denver either. But, yeah, I mean, again, it's the quality of some of the throws and plays he made in the game. It's not the – like, I know it's preseason game number one. And here's the other reason I say, like, people are underreacting. Bronco fans, Broncos, if you want to be the best possible team you can possibly be and be in the playoffs, for my money, you need Drew Lock as the quarterback. You know, what the point of having Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton and K.J. Hamler with Teddy Bridgewater? He's not going to throw the ball deep to them and be aggressive and make plays that way. He's not. He just had Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore. And, I mean, that's the reason they didn't want him there, because it just there's too many plays and yards left on the field. And you play in the AFC West, where you know, like, yeah, maybe you can beat Kansas City every now and then from your defense, but I would bet one out of those two matchups, you're going to have to score 30, right? So I just really like the way he looked out there. He looks confident, knowing where he's going with the football. He's always had talent, and I think he's cleaned up his mechanics a little bit too, to be a little quicker and tighter. And we have a throw, like, we need to show the post route.
80-yard touchdown to KJ Hamler.
80-yard touchdown to KJ Hamler. And to me, like, this is like the point of emphasis. This is where he can be different than Teddy Bridgewater. This is not Teddy Bridgewater's, you know, bread and butter type thing. And K.J. Hamler and Jeudy and Cortland Sutton, they can fly. They can do some special things. But these are the – and then we know they want to run the ball and have – they got a decent O-line now and things like that. So here we go. He's got a little play-action pass. K.J. Hamler's on the right. The Vikings are basically trying to, what I think, double cover both receivers. Jeudy on the left. I think the corner and safety are bracketing him. And then you got K.J. Hamler on the right, and I think the corner and the safety are bracketing those two, leaving the front seven for the inside-outside zone scheme that Munchak is so good at, their offensive line coach. So now he pulls the ball, makes a good fake. Go to the next picture, Pete. Here we go. I mean, first off, I mean, the guy he's going to throw the ball to is not open right here, right? But he's got an aggressive mindset. He always has, you know, too aggressive at times, to where this is where he's got to learn and maybe, you know, dial it back a little bit. But he's got great experience too in knowing aggressive, to know body language and things like that. He sees this and he goes, wait, I know they're doubling him, but KJ's really fucking fast, and that safety on the hash on the 30-yard line is flat-footed. So I'm going to sit here and wait on it for a second. And he does. And, of course, go to the next picture, Pete. You're going to see, uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Big trouble, little China. That safety's like, oh, guys, coach, look, I can't hold him. He's trying to hold him and do anything right now because he knows he's screwed.
And Drew's still holding the ball.
He's going to let him clear. Right,
so Teddy would have already thrown the ball at this point, probably.
Teddy's bread and butter. There's no doubt. I don't know what Teddy would have done. But he's still holding the ball, letting him clear, probably made sure the backside safety wasn't like somewhere where he didn't see him to pick the ball off.
That's fun. These are benefits of having a strong arm, right? You can wait an extra beat to see
if the guy clears it. Exactly right. It is the benefit. So he does, and go ahead. Next picture, Pete. I mean, boom, on the money to where you can see nobody has a chance.
Yeah.
He throws a 50-yard strike. I think it was 60 in the air. And that's the element he can bring. And again, let's just evaluate it for what it is. Let's wipe away from our memory what we saw in the rookie year with a dysfunctional team or things like that. Let's give the guy a chance now that they got things kind of settled there in Denver and see where it goes.
You go, he's still got to learn that he can't just heave it up and get an 80-yard touchdown, but that play is not going to help him learn. That play is not – he's not going to look at that and be like, I shouldn't do that.
No. Well, you know, hopefully, like, you hear the stories about he met with Peyton Manning in the offseason and he really, like, learned how to study film and defenses to where – you know, he'll have a little bit of a break this year and go, I don't have to fit every ball into a tight window.
All right, how about we'll stay with the Denver Broncos. Are we underreacting to how good Javonte Williams could be for that team?
I think so. I mean, Javonte Williams, to me, looks... He was the most impressive rookie running back I've seen yet.
The most impressive.
Yeah, I'm already self-scouting myself. I made him the number 5 running back. And I'm just telling you, early warning looks like I'm going to be wrong. Oh, hold on. Look at this beautiful married couple. Oh, Alexa and Matt Casey live on Chris Sims Unbuttoned.
Now you've just ensured that part will be edited out.
I had to embarrass
in the future. Yeah.
I had to embarrass them a little bit. You know, yeah, I got to self-scout myself a little bit with these running backs. It's probably my weakest position, honestly, that I've ranked.
You think so?
I do.
Really?
I think I've had some...
You were high on Jonathan Taylor last year.
I had some good ones, I know.
That was a good one, although you had Clyde Edwards-Helaire number 1.
Right, and I was wrong there. I should have made Taylor 1. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's some of the guys that I make 3, 4, and 5, I think, that I'm, like, disappointed in at times.
Okay, so you had Javonte Williams 5.
Right.
You had Michael Carter 2.
Right.
So how would you reorder it? Now, like, why are you saying all this?
I'm not putting enough credit. You know, this is where I wish
are you
I could...
this is the whole. Are you overreacting now to week one?
To
here?
Me,
why are you throwing all these rankings out?
Well, I always got to scout myself here.
That's
but,
true.
But you know, I think the thing I would love to be able to see these guys in person a little bit.
Sure.
But I think the thing that sometimes I forget at running back is it's a size game. It's a size and power game. And sometimes, even though some of these fast, small guys look awesome in these college highlights and everything like that, that doesn't mean it's going to translate to the NFL where everybody's faster and things like that, to where the power comes into play more. Mm-hmm. The ability to break tackles and run between the tackles and do all those type of things is a real thing. And that's where Williams, to me, just in the game, looks special, whether he wanted to put his head down and drive the pile, but then he had the ability to, wait, I'm going to put my head down and drive the pile. Oh, there's nothing there. I'm going to bounce it outside and make a run down the sideline. To me, he just looked legit. And what I would say is, like, Melvin Gordon better watch out. He better get back healthy or he's going to lose his starting job because that guy looks like a starting running back to me. Definitely. Yeah, if I had to re-rank him just from what I've seen to this point so far, I'll keep Etienne at 1. But, like, I might have Javonte 2 and Najee Harris 3.
Wow.
You know, again, Najee.
Yeah, what do you think about him?
Yeah, you want to hit on him? Are we hitting on him?
Yeah, well, let's talk about him because you had him 4 in your rankings. A lot of people had him, what, 1?
1
Many
for the
people
most
had
part.
Him 1. You still would not put him 1, but you've got to see him here and – you know, I would kind of frame this one. Are we underreacting to how vital he's going to be to that Steelers offense and their approach?
I think that's what you're saying is exactly right. Yeah, I think we are underreacting, no doubt about it. I won't lie. I didn't do a podcast that week, but with the Hall of Fame game, when I saw him, I went, ooh, I don't know if I like the way that looks. Now, again, I'm not trying to judge too harshly. These are young guys learning a new system. They're nervous. They're mm-hmm. thinking. You know, they got camp legs. Sometimes I got to remember that, too. That's like, man, they've been running for 14 days straight, twice yeah. a day. Like, they might not be as fast as they really are or as sure. explosive as they really are, right? But, man, last week I thought, uh-oh. Najee Harris looks like he's the real deal against Philadelphia. Just some of the quickness he made. He had a little run where he ran out to the left, and a pile of people came on. He jumped, and he got like another 5 yards. And I just went, uh-oh, they might have fucking Le'Veon Bell here. Watch out. Hmm. You know, I could be wrong. But I think, like, your point is the point that they need him to be what we saw last week against Philadelphia. It's crucial. They're trying to change the you know, the culture of their offense. They know they can't drop back with Big Ben 45 right. times a game and win. You know, so, yeah, they need him to play well, to establish the attitude for the offensive line, and do all those things. Yeah, I mean, he might be up there as one of the most important rookies in all of football wow. this year, because they are a Super Bowl team.
Yeah.
And if they can run the ball and do those type of things, I can promise you Big Ben will hit Chase Claypool and Deontay Johnson when they're open and he's protected. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm interested to see as we go forward here.
Isn't it funny how these teams that are in the window, we say this is their time, yet even the Steelers have a player, a rookie, who they're banking a lot of their offensive success
yeah.
on,
yeah.
that guy. And so we'll see if they can do it.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We got a couple here for the Chiefs, one offensively, one defensively. Let's start offensively.
Yeah.
There's an underreaction to Patrick Mahomes going on out there. What is it? What are we reacting to?
I mean,
what's happening?
This to me.
Because we always overreact to Patrick Mahomes,
I know.
Right?
This is one I can't believe there's not more. Like, I pose this question to anybody out there. Please answer me. Patrick Mahomes got his own sneaker. I don't know if you've seen the commercial yet.
They're not.
Really cool. They're really cool sneakers. It's a cool commercial altogether. But what I'm saying, and I'm underreaction to, is has there been a football player that's had a sneaker since Bo Jackson or Deion Sanders? I mean, I don't remember one.
Well, you're more of the sneaker guy than
I
me.
I know,
so
but I mean, I think even you would know enough to know, like, I mean, hey, listen, Brady, Rodgers, Manning, they never had their own sneaker.
Brady never had his own sneaker?
No. I mean, he's got the Under Armour cleats now and things like that, but sneaker for a football player is incredibly rare. I don't think we've had one this century that has been sold as this football player wears this sneaker. You know, of course, football players wear cleats. It's different than basketball, where
it's like,
Steph Curry's wearing that sneaker, and now I can buy it, and I'm watching him play basketball, and I can wear it. You know, like, football players, you're like, well, he's wearing cleats. I'm not going to wear my cleats to the office tomorrow.
Right.
So that to me, is where it's rare, and I think we are underreacting. I mean, that's big news to me.
I mean, I can't think of any, but right. I do know that the next time we do a podcast, we'll be reading the 30 tweets of people saying, like, what about this guy's sneaker?
And what about Mello Ball?
Yeah, he played football in high school.
Yeah, right. I mean, I can't think of one.
Okay, all right. So we're underreacting to the footwear.
I think it's just kind of big. I mean, that
I
just
agree.
Speaks to the celebrity and star that he is.
Well, it's funny. You'd think there would be more, but you're right. Sneaker is not necessarily something that is correlated with football or the NFL.
Nope.
He is transcendent.
He is.
In the sneaker game.
Underreaction.
Okay, so what about on the defensive side here? What, there's a move. Chris Jones moving to defensive end.
Right.
And you think we're underreacting to this.
You heard me say it a little in the spring. I think this is going to be a trend as we go forward in the NFL. But, like, we're underreacting from the aspect of Aaron Donald and Chris Jones are the two best interior defensive linemen in all of football.
Yeah.
It's Aaron Donald, then Chris Jones. Period. And they're moving the second best player to his position to a new position. He's playing defense end now. He started the game last week against San Francisco at defense end. I mean, we're underreacting just from that aspect alone. The second best guy at his position in the sport has been moved to another position. That's weird. You know, I mean, if we did that at any other position, you'd go, really? They're going to do that?
Yeah.
He's so awesome right there.
Why mess with it?
Why mess with it? Exactly right. But where first off, he's a freak athlete. They're trying to get their best 11 on the field. I know that because they have Jerron Reed now. Now you have Derek Nandi inside who they've had. So they put those two guys there. Jones is athletic enough to be a defense end at his size and do that type of stuff. So that's where, it does make sense. And to me, this is where I think this is going to be a trend going forward because of the athletic quarterbacks we're seeing in football constantly. You know, when you have a Chris Jones and a Nandi and a Jerron Reed on your defensive line, you can ask them to do different things than maybe a smaller, faster group would do. And if you're going to play, let's say, Lamar Jackson or Kyle Shanahan and the Trey Lance running offense, now you have three big guys, three defensive tackles as your starting defensive line. I know that weak side pass rusher, he's always going to be a little undersized in the short edge and all that, but that's what you want. But these other three guys are going to be able to be space eaters. And what I mean by that, like two gap, as you've heard me talk about, you know, be able to hold up a guy. I got two gaps. And why I think it's going to be a trend as we go forward here is because of the running quarterback. So now you have more flexibility with your second level running linebacker and safety to go, oh, wait, they're going to run the read option or they're going to do this with the quarterback design run, right? We don't have to have you worry about like the A gap and now get over there to stop this run game on the outside. We got a big guy in the middle now who's got that gap. Don't worry. And he's got the other gap too. So you can hang around there, but as soon as you feel like a get out there and get him, right? I think it's going to give teams more flexibility and diversity in how to defend some of these running quarterbacks. I think it's going to go there. We'll see. I'm not saying I'm definitely right. Yeah. I have a feeling that's why New England did what they did this offseason. I'm thinking they're going to take that approach a little bit. Like, we got three big monsters, four big monsters up here. You know, okay, have fun trying to run your quarterback design stuff. Our safety and linebacker should be free to just come and, you know, kick some ass. We'll see, but I think it's kind of a cool thing, and I'm interested to see how it goes.
It'll always be one of those things. You might want to do it. You might not have the personnel to do it. You might not have the players who have the ability to do it. But, something to keep an eye on.
Definitely.
A defensive trend here. Oh, here, by the way,
see?
Are the new shoes, the new sneakers, if you're watching on YouTube, from Patrick Mahomes.
Uh-huh.
Neon green.
I know. I kind of like that.
But why would you do that? You're a chief. You're red. Why would you throw neon green?
I think they have all the color. I think they have all. In the commercial, they show like five different colors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but either way, I mean,
is that his own logo on the side?
He does
have Adidas.
No, that's the three stripes is Adidas,
or as some people say, Adidas.
Adidas. He does have his logo on the tongue. There's a P and a M for Patrick Mahomes. You haven't seen the new Patrick Mahomes logo yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Yes, he does have a logo. He wears the hat and everything like that.
You have a logo. Pete goes, everyone has a logo. And I was like, that's true. And I was like, hey, the guy to my left has a logo.
Yeah.
Chris Sims, look at the football head guy.
You're right. With the top button. You're right. I forgot I got my own logo. But nobody's making sneakers out of it yet. So.
You could, though. I think that's a good-looking logo. I think our logo team did a great job with that.
I do not disagree one bit. I love the logo.
You should make that your personal logo.
You know, it's
your
a football. It's an airhead, right? I mean, I'm kind of an airhead. It makes sense. It all works.
Yeah, it could be deflated, though. You don't know, you know, depending on, you know, how you like it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. A couple more here.
Yeah. I'll try to be quicker.
And this has been good. We've only confused ourselves like two times this whole time.
That's good.
We'll see if we can do it one more time. Matthew Stafford. Sean McVay has said, no, he will not play. As long as I'm here, my veteran quarterback will never play in the preseason. But here Matthew Stafford is going to a new team, right? Are we underreacting to the negative effects not playing in the preseason may have on Matthew Stafford?
No. Are we underreacting to the negative? I think people are overreacting with this one a little bit. Like trying to be like, oh, he's got to play in the preseason. It's a new offense, all those type of things. No. First off, you know, people like Matthew Stafford, Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, they don't need to play in the preseason. You know, especially when I say Rodgers and Stafford, because they played longer than Mahomes and have done it for so long.
Okay.
Like, it's riding a bike to them.
Even on a new team with a new system.
Because, you know, yes, because I think here's the other thing that I think people are missing. You know, one, he's going to get plenty of reps in practice and do all of that.
But is practice the same
as
a game?
No, it's not the same. You're right. It's not exactly the same, right? So, yeah, okay, you might not get week one 100% your best Stafford. You're going to get 97%, but you took away the huge injury risk for the other three preseason games. So you'll take the 3% loss, right? Okay, but here's the other thing to your question, because I think that's the question. Can you really do that in practice? I think we're going to continue to see this trend that you're seeing with these preseason joint practices.
Yeah.
You know, the Rams were practicing against the Cowboys last week. Now this week or next week, they're going to be practicing against the Raiders, right? So he's going to get plenty of somewhat live reps, even though he's not going to get hit, but at least different defenses. I don't know what they're doing, different guys. Of course, it's going to be competitive because you're going against another team to where they should feel fine. And the other thing we can't forget, too, the Rams are one of those teams that have taken the approach of, like, we're an all-star team. Our starting 22 is awesome. We don't have a lot of depth behind it. And from that aspect, too, if you're going to build your team like that, yeah, fuck playing some of your great players in the preseason. Mm-hmm. You don't have the wiggle room to go, well, our second and third stringers are really good. We're not going to really miss that much. No, that's not the way they're built. So I think McVay and Stafford, I think people are overreacting to that.
You know what? You talking there made me think about something.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this for years now, about the value of preseason games, and owners don't want to give them up because you can sell them for the same amount. It's part of the season ticket package.
Yeah, right.
But I wonder, what if you rethought it entirely in some of these joint practices where you can control it? I mean, you still get to see Matt Stafford out there against another team, even if he's not getting hit.
I almost feel like that becomes a thing.
Yeah, what if that just becomes the thing that we fill up stadiums for? And, you know, like a spring practice for Notre Dame. I mean, they control
it's
that.
That's an interesting thought.
You know,
I mean,
not?
I wouldn't care. It wouldn't make a difference to me to go, oh, I'm watching an actual preseason game or I'm watching them practice 2 days before the game, and it's a legit live practice.
Yeah, you get to see Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford.
That'd be interesting.
Right?
Just, yeah, it might. Maybe teams start to make that a thing. Like, yeah, we have our preseason game Friday night, but you can come to the stadium on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and watch us scrimmage this team.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't have to worry about our quarterback getting killed or the receiver getting his head knocked off over the middle in those type of scenarios. I, again, New England started this trend. I mean, of course they did, because they're the ones with all the brains in football.
Yeah.
But I just think this is the way the sport's going, too. I think you're going to continue to see more and more of this because of, like, what you just said. The coaches can control the outcome a little bit and feel better about playing their star players and doing that stuff. It's a more of a controlled setting. And as you've heard me say before, it's better quality practice than when you're practicing against your own team. You know, the second stringer in the NFL football team, okay, you're taking reps for your own defense, and now you got to go do scout team for the offense, and you got to take a bunch of reps there.
Yeah,
you don't have to do that when the other team's there, because the other team goes in, and you get to get yourself by the sidelines.
Right.
You know, get coached up a little bit, get a rest to then maximize your reps the next time you're out there to impress the coach. I think that's where it's all headed.
Interesting. Maybe a chance.
But
to
I
rethink
think your
it.
Idea is kind of
there's something there.
There might
right?
be something there.
Why wouldn't you want to go see? If you told me I can either see Matt Stafford go against a defense, he's not going to get hit. It's not a real game, but I want to see him throw it.
I hear you. I'm with you there,
Cooper
too.
Cup and all those guys. All right, last one.
Yeah.
The final story out there comes from Las Vegas that maybe we're underreacting to. With Marcus Mariota injured, Nathan Peterman played the entire game Saturday. Is that a story that we should be talking about more?
I do think there's
something there.
There's somewhat of a, like, I just want to go, like, listen, I don't know if nobody's overreacting, But I think we're underreacting by just let's bring up this point. First off, this is John Gruden, who's a psycho about his quarterbacks. I know firsthand. Okay. Yeah, they didn't want to play Carr. Mariota's banged up.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely some sort of love affair with Nathan Peterman. I mean, you could see it in Hard Knocks, whatever it is. And the way they came out and called the game, all the throws they gave him, even the start of the game, they came out aggressive. To me, it looked like, hey, let's see what this guy's got. Let's see if we can make up something. What I'm saying to watch out for is watch out for them making Nathan Peterman the backup to Derek Carr and them trying to trade Marcus Mariota before the season's over. It's just something that has crossed my mind. It has. You know, there's going to be some teams out there that are going to be like, oh, we could use a backup quarterback because we kind of have a good team and we're not comfortable with our thing, our situation. We'll trade something for Marcus Mariota. We know Mariota was a little bit on the trade block early in the offseason. I think they were looking for suitors and things like that. You know, he took a pay cut. So, again, I'm not saying anybody's overreacting this one. What I am saying is knowing that coach out there and just kind of reading between the tea leaves of the NFL and what I've heard all year, I would say I think that's going to be a possibility. I'd like to see where this goes.
It's always hard to get that market moving for a backup unless there's a pressing need, right? Because teams don't want to pay up for it. Like how much – like you may see a need for Marcus Mariota, but you don't want to give up too much.
No,
you know, like I don't want to give up anything on this team. I just want to – I want to have them, but I don't want to – pay for him, kind of. That seems like what most teams, the situation they're in, until their starter gets hurt and then they're screwed.
Well,
right?
Like, that's where, like, all right, Cleveland. I mean, not Cleveland. The Colts.
Yep.
If they go, like, get through these next two preseason, like, man, Eason and Ellinger, they're falling apart. We can't trust them. Wentz isn't going to be back to week three.
Yep.
You might see that. Here's another team that just jumps out to me. The Ravens. Like, why would you – you got a Super Bowl team. I'm sorry. If Lamar gets hurt, McSorley, who's hurt again, he barely played last year. He got hurt. He played in a preseason game. He's hurt. You're gonna the Super Bowl team, you're going to risk it on McSorley?
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't. I mean, that's just what I would say. So those are two teams that jump out to me, like, right off the bat. And then, you know, just looking at other situations, I'm just trying to, and I didn't even plan to look at this. I'm just going off the top of my head here. But, gosh, you know, I mean, just trying to see if there's any teams that really jump out to me to where I would think, ooh, he makes sense there in case something happened. Who'd he say?
Titans?
They're not going to bring him back, I don't think. That's just a little dicey. I know. I thought about the Titans for the thought. I know what you're thinking, Pete said Titans. I know what he's thinking because they're a team, too, where you go, who's your backup? We don't even know, and you're of a Super Bowl team. So that makes sense, but I think that's one place we could say no. I don't know. Would the Cowboys want to go that route, right? That would be one that jumps out to me there.
And people say, you know, okay, well, if it's only going to be
Detroit Lions,
two or 3 weeks without your starter, what's the big deal? But I feel like that's the only time. That's the time you want that guy. Like a Teddy Bridgewater for 5 weeks when Drew Brees was out.
That's right.
Because if your starting quarterback's out for – if Lamar Jackson's out for the year, they're screwed anyway. It doesn't matter if they have the best backup in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
But it's like it's almost more important if your guy is just missing a few weeks here and there, whether you can stay competitive, maybe win a game and get that first-round bye or lock up a playoff spot. So I do feel like when your starter's not going to be out for that long, it's even more important to have a backup.
You got to hold down the fort. I mean, now listen, you know, you get in a situation like the Colts, their season could be fucking over before it starts.
Yeah.
It could be 0-3, and you go, yeah, that's 0-3. Mm-hmm. Like, basically nobody in the history of football goes to the playoffs
we
after going
0-3.
Start
doing all those numbers, you
right.
know?
There's 10%. Been one team in the last 20 years and, like, all that type of stuff. So, yeah, that's where I think it's interesting, the Mariota situation. I'm probably missing another team or two out there that makes sense. What'd you say, Pete? I lost it.
Cardinals, Colt McCoy.
Cardinals, I did look at them. I do like Colt. No, I think Mariota is definitely a step above Colt McCoy. I said the Lions, not that they're in a Super Bowl window or anything, but – you know, again, I don't look at their quarterback situation as being the best. I mean,
Lions, if Jared Goff goes down, they'll just take the 0-17. They'll go, we'll just take the number one pick. No big deal.
Yeah, so I don't know. But I think it's food for thought, nonetheless. That Raiders situation, it caught my attention. I just wanted to hit on it.
All right, so that was, and we only confused ourselves, I think, three times.
Really two and a half.
There on underreaction stories that maybe should be getting a little more publicity or stories that are getting publicity that maybe should be looked at a little differently.
A little differently.
I think we accomplished our goal.
I think we did.
Don't you think?
Hopefully. I'm glad we did this. I feel better.
Tweet Chris. Pete will read it and tell us if we accomplished our goal. Yeah, if we did it. Good stuff, though.
Good stuff. You're the man. All right. Don't you ever fucking wear a blazer on my podcast ever again.
I did it the whole thing.
The whole thing.
And there were times where it felt very uncomfortable.
You must know your pits are sweaty. I'm guessing that.
I feel like it's a good pit day for me, too.
Oh, damn. Darn it. We will never know.
We will know.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty good. You're right. Yeah, you're pretty good. I see a little something on the left. Okay.
Maybe it was good that I wore the jacket. Good call.
Everybody, we'll be back Monday. You know we're going to hit on the full weekend slate of preseason games. I'm a little pissed. There's only a few games on Thursday and Friday. Saturday's loaded, and that makes it harder for me to watch everything. But we'll hit on all that. I do think next Wednesday, Big Phil will be back in the fold. He had to do something today, so we'll get him on there.
Pauly B's coming back next
week, so we'll start the rotation between you two.
I'm going to be out for Paralympics for a couple weeks.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you, the man.
Have fun in your blazer.
Thank you.
All right.
Peace out.
Ahmed, you the man. Thanks. See everybody on Monday. Clap it up.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.